You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. In case you didn't know it, and admittedly I did not, September is National Honey Month. And joining the exchange to tell us more about it is my guest, Dr. Sharon Schmidt. She's the president of Cascade Girl, which organizes the annual Honey and Mead Festival in Medford. Welcome to the exchange, Dr. Schmidt.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on this morning.
So tell me about the festival.
Well, it will be on September 13th at Edenvale Winery. And as you mentioned, this is going to be National Honey Month. We're taking the liberty of declaring it Oregon Honey Month as well. We will have about 30 different vendors. I believe 7, possibly 8 of those will be honey vendors, and 3 will be mead vendors. We do this on a yearly basis, not only to appreciate our bees and our beekeepers and so many others who are involved in the process of honey. Sorry, I'm having a phone moment here where somebody's trying to call through. But we also educate the public about honey, its taste, how to discern the flavors that they're tasting, and how other products from the hive are made. So we're very much looking forward to it. As I said, it will be on September 13th, starting at 11 and going until 6 p.m. So we also have invited 3 bands to come and play, and we're very excited about them.
Well, who are your bands?
First one up will be Danielle Kelly with her quartet. Secondly, Mountaintop Sound. And third, Shibo and the Twisted Vines. And our friend Jen Ambrose will come in and MC this as well. We also have 3 speakers, the first of which is going to be Delcy Mouse from Flying Bee Ranch. And she and I are going to talk about honey tasting. Second up will be Paul Davitt, who will be talking about the Bee Heroes America program that we run for veterans. And the third will be Dave Cullen, who's coming up from the coast to talk about what we like to call creatures of the night. And that's just a fancy way of saying he's going to talk about pollinators that come out after dark.
Excellent. Sounds like a great lineup. I should say that Danny hosts the open air program on JPR's Rhythm and News Service, just to keep that on the up and up. Tell me about your work at Cascade Girl.
We have spent some time developing the veteran program and our school kids program, but we also produce honey, and we had the opportunity to produce honey that won the Good Food Awards on 2 separate occasions. Good Food Awards being something that's held in San Francisco. And as a disclaimer, I could say that I've also been a judge for that, but that's very separate from being a producer. So it's an artisanal honey competition, and we entered a number of times before we got it right. But we finally figured out what an award-winning honey should taste like, and we were delighted to be able to win that on 2 occasions. So that was super fun. So we are in the production aspect of beekeeping and honey making. We're also doing the program for veterans at the VA here locally in White City. And we have a program for kids that we've done multiple times in the past. So we're going to be gearing that up again for next season. So watch out, educators. We'll be looking for you.
What? It's interesting that you're talking about honey tasting and winning these awards for different flavors. I wasn't aware that honey had a variety of flavors.
It does. And just as we have wine varietals, we also have honey varietals. And then most frequently, I think what you see both in stores and on stands is a mixed floral honey. So I've been working with honeybees for a decade now, and during that time gained some proficiency in facilitating them doing what they want to do. And what they want to do is make honey and baby bees. prior to that time, I had lots of experience tasting honey, and I was just so taken by the magic of it all, the different flavors, the different aromas. But I really lacked the vocabulary to describe what I was tasting. So my vocabulary was limited to words like sweet, kind of sweet, and very sweet.
Sounds like my vocabulary.
I think many people can identify with that. So to learn how to put my sensory experience into words, I got trained in honey sensory analysis at UC Davis with the president of the Italian Register of Experts and Amina Harris, who's the former and original director of the Honey and Pollination Center at Davis. So after that, year after year, we got better at identifying what it is that we were tasting, and then finally were able to enter the awards competition, which was absolutely thrilling. But prior to about 2019, I really didn't think, the question that I didn't really think about was, is this genuine honey that I'm tasting? However, shortly thereafter, everybody in the industry and everybody in beekeeping was thinking about that, because in 2019, the World Beekeeping Conference, Worldwide Beekeeping Conference, was doing a honey judging. And they did some preliminary testing and found that nearly 50% of the honeys that were being judged were suspected of adulteration with sugars, pesticide residues, or a compound that forms when you overheat honey. And you would wonder, you know, why is anybody overheating honey? But it happens because it tends to liquefy it. Some people some companies are interested in purifying it, you know, which they think is the equivalent of getting all of the natural substances out of it and creating a longer shelf life. And that's the exact opposite of what we're interested in. We want those polyphenols in there. We want those bits of pollen. Now, we do preliminary filtration, as most people should, to get out chunks of wax and things like that. But we definitely want the helpful elements of honey to stay in the product. So at that time, people started thinking about, is this or isn't this genuine? Which then led to a conversation that happened on a worldwide basis when we began to have people really talk about this more. So there are only a couple of ways that you can reliably discern whether you have a sample that's valid and genuine. And some of those include some very fancy tests. Very fancy analytical tests, things that you wouldn't do as a consumer. And now there's also something called DNA testing, which gets specific enough that you can actually detect the DNA of the beekeeper in the product. So these are not something that people are going to do at home, and probably everybody has read online that there are some tests that they can do at home to determine whether their honey is genuine. And these are like the thumb and finger test, or the circle test, or the water test, or the fire test. And I would recommend none of those. I think that the best thing that you can possibly do is actually know your beekeeper. And that is something that you can do here, because we are blessed with a large number of both backyard and commercial beekeepers. So if you know your beekeeper, they can answer your questions about where the honey came from, what yards did they have those boxes in before they took the honey out of the comb, and so on and so forth. Did they strain the honey, or did they super strain the honey? And naturally, of course, we want no additives. It's hard to say for sure, but from the testing that was done in the EU, it looks like about 46% of the honeys that they took a look at were adulterated in some way. So when I'm saying know your beekeeper, I think that that's probably the best thing that you can possibly do. And if your beekeeper, if their bees are collecting here in Southern Oregon, you have an additional bonus because we are one of, I believe, only 8 counties in the United States that actually are GMO free. And I know a couple of years ago you did an interview with Elise Higley, who celebrated 10 years of GMO-free growing here in the state. So I'm very excited about that, and I definitely endorse that that approach. So, yeah.
Well, we're very fortunate
something
here.
To remember.
We're very fortunate here in Southern Oregon. My guest is Dr. Sharon Schmidt. She's the president of Cascade Girl, which is organizing the annual Honey and Mead Festival in Medford at Edenvale Winery on September 13th. Dr. Schmidt, recently the Guardian News Media reported that the largest beekeeping farm in America lost 75% of its honeybees due to a virus. And nationwide, beekeepers have lost, on average, 60% of their bees, which the Guardian reports to be the largest die-off recorded in history. Tell me about the pollinators that make honey.
In this regard, that's a very sad fact, which is true. This past year has been very difficult for many people. Now, I have to say that across the board, that's not true. We know some beekeepers who had maybe 20 hives or 25 hives, and they kept them all. They lived right through the winter, not just 1 year in a row, but 2 years in a row. I think what we should probably study is what they're doing that's making them so successful. We know plenty of things that would make you unsuccessful at beekeeping, and that is if your bees are exposed to pesticides, pestilence, some sort of disease, lack of forage. So we try to encourage people to plant flowers. We have the Jackson County Master Gardeners coming to our festival as well. They'll be there to answer people's questions about their own gardens. So we try to encourage planting flowers, and I would say personally, particularly during the month of August, September, October, the things that bloom at that time, we really want that to happen because this is, of course, when the nectar dearth happens. Bees collect, honeybees collect both pollen, which is their source of fat and protein, as well as nectar. And the nectar is their source of carbohydrate from which honey is actually made. They have very few sources when it comes down to it in the fall, and of course nothing in the winter, or very little in the winter, and they don't fly during the winter because their physiology prevents them from actually being able to flap their wings and get going. They stay in their hive.
So they really need these flowers.
Yes, well they need to have the products of those flowers. So if we can amp that up for August, September blooms, that is very, very helpful to bees, honeybees in particular. They're the one insect that operates collaboratively in this way, where they work together to both collect food, store food, process food, and they also work to collectively raise the young. Absolutely fascinating creatures, but they're not the only pollinators. Our native bees are at risk here too. Native bees are things like the beautiful fluffy bombus that you see depicted everywhere. We want to make sure that they too have enough sustenance that they can live and live well during their overwintering, although they do it differently than the honeybees do.
Well, Dr. Schmidt, we have about 30 seconds left. What can visitors to the Honey and Mead Festival expect, and is there registration required?
Not required. You can get a ticket on Eventbrite. You can take a look at our website to see what's going on at www.OregonHoneyFestival.com. Or you can get a ticket at the gate. And veterans come in free. with identification, as do 12-year-olds and under and First Nations people.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Schmidt. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
My guest was Dr. Sharon Schmidt. She's the president of Cascade Girl, which is organizing the annual Honey and Mead Festival in Medford at Edenvale Winery on September 13th.